Hey, this is Tim McKernan, and I am here with Seth Goldkamp of Design Air Heating and Cooling, and I have been a longtime Design Air client. What separates you guys from everybody else?
It's becoming more common for companies to just get their foot in the door. They try to come up with different ways to upsell. They try to see how much they can make off of a customer as opposed to, hey, we're in there to do a service. We're going to do it well. We're going to do it for a fair price.
I don't know how many emails I have received from our listeners who experienced the incredible customer service Design Air Heating and Cooling provides. It's Design Air Heating and Cooling online at designairservice.com.
You've got to be on acid to understand what's going on this show.
It's the Brown and Crouppen Morning After.
KPN-TFM HD2.
Collinsville, St. Louis.
Welcome back to TMA, and it's presented to you by Brown and Crouppen. Welcome to the Schaefer Door Company. 9 o'clock hour. Timothy Michael McKernan, Douglas Elvin Vaughn, the Plowhawks on the ones and twos. And in studio now, Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies with his son Benjamin. In studio and getting a chance, Doug, Benjamin is interested in getting into broadcasting, and you and I said we want to encourage him to do it. We think it's a great industry.
I would say print media. There seems to be a much bigger upside in the newspaper industry.
I didn't know we restarted our internship program, but I do love the energy.
Son, I'm going to cut right in here.
Oh, no.
Don't listen to a word any of these people say.
No! Doug, what's going on?
Yeah. Journalism is not a great career path. But I only chose it because it gives me a chance to watch what other people are doing and then criticize them for that.
Things that we ourselves, of course, not able to do, but then we sit here and then criticize them and then sometimes create narratives of why we don't like them.
But what about the complete accountability that
comes from
comments?
Well, somebody has to hold them accountable.
Well, there's two sides to it. There can be, you know, great examples of what you should do in life and examples of what you shouldn't do. We are one of the examples. You pick and choose what you want to believe, but...
We indeed have important roles. We're the gatekeepers of truth, or at least our opinions. That's about all we care about.
Put that on the wall.
gatekeepers
of our own opinions.
That's who we are.
I like that.
We just had this sent in, and it's called an excerpt from my TMA tell-all, chapter 23, They Don't Believe What They're Saying, is the title of the chapter.
Oh, no.
Doug just said... There's nobody more obnoxious than Philly fans. And then the Plowboy said, what about people wooing for the last 3 years like Ric Flair? And then Doug says, well, everybody does that. And then the Plowboy says, yeah, but we do the wave. And then Doug says, every fan base does that too. And then the Plowboy says, yeah, but Helmo nachos. And Doug says, they all have food. And then the Plowboy says, but what about the management and bobbleheads, bro? Thanks. That's from Ellen Foley's Hot Take Ghost Rider. We don't cheat with good friends.
You know, put that on a T-shirt, just that excerpt.
That whole conversation, yeah.
Put that on the wall somewhere.
And that's why Benjamin needs to get into broadcasting, to be able to do that. I don't know if everybody can do this. You know what I mean, Doug? I don't know if everybody can
You're
do
born
it.
With some of this talent that you're looking at now.
What's his email name?
It's Mark? Mighty impressive. It really is.
Jeremy Rutherford is brought to you every week by Mark Hanna of Evergreen Wealth Strategies, who's online at evergreenstl.com. Call him at 314-889-0503. He's a wonderful gentleman. He's a life Sherpa, and he will make you feel better when you're off the phone with him talking about your financial situation. JR, good morning.
Good morning. I can't imagine that car ride after the show where Benjamin says, yeah, Dad, I want to do wealth management instead. I'm sorry. I don't know about the journalism.
Thank you. Exactly right.
I've got a therapy session scheduled for him for
right
after
this, a cleansing of some kind.
Yeah.
I understand that.
And myself.
And yourself, for that matter. JR, we got Blues, we got Blackhawks tonight. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like either team's going to be partaking in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Kings lost last night, if anybody's holding out hope. How much hope would you give, JR, or you completely turn the page to 2024, 2025?
Yeah, definitely.
That's it.
Is this the most unanticipated Blues Blackhawks game in the history of the rivalry tonight?
Yeah, possibly so.
Yeah. It could be.
And they're still not mathematically out of it, but you've given up, huh?
No, not yet. Yeah, I remember years ago I would email the NHL, and they'd actually have statisticians who would help you out in terms of the math, because there's a lot more to it than you think. It's not just the points. You got to do the schedule too, who plays who down the stretch. And I realize now it's pretty cut and dry, but like with 8 or 10, 12 games left, those people will help you figure it out. But not mathematically eliminated, but coming to a rink near you soon.
Do you have to pay him to help you figure that out?
I don't even know. There's no face or name behind it. You just shoot off the email and they shoot back the information. For all I know, it could be you know, Dan in Wentzville, who's replying to the email.
Oh, Dan in Wentzville.
Good, very well.
Questions are coming in 314-881-TMA5. It is the Jeff Lottman, Compass Realty text inbox, as people also are focused on the offseason. Serious question for JR. Is Jordan Kyrou tradable this summer? I think he's one of the main issues with this team. It's not just his defense. He turns the puck over incessantly, lacks effort for significant time periods. Being young isn't an excuse. He's not young. He's 26. Your thoughts, JR? That's from Harrison's brother, Master.
Well, the one thing I'll point out is, if Harrison can point that out, that there are teams around the league that see that as well. And so it's tough to make a deal when you have a guy who's been inconsistent. You know, ton of upside. We've talked about that a lot in the past couple of years. With Jordan Kyrou, to me, what it comes down to is if a trade could materialize this summer, is there a dance partner? Is there a team out there who says, hey, we can fix those other things. We want that offense. We want those 40 goals. I don't know that it'll happen this summer, but as we've discussed in the past, I believe that the Blues have to entertain it if it does pop up in conversation with teams around the league.
Hard thing about that is that scoring ability, much like what Tarasenko used to bring, and people would complain about Tarasenko's ups and downs, it's so elite, and if you don't have that, it puts so much pressure down the lineup. It really comes down to, what do you get in return? And if you're trying to turn it around, it's such a delicate, difficult balancing act, don't you think, for Army in making that decision?
Yeah, Mark, definitely. And I don't think it's a trade where you just unload Jordan Kyrou to unload him, if indeed you even go down this route. That this is all just hypothetical. You know, I don't think that you just leave this huge hole in your roster and think that you're going to fill it at some point. I do think that if they were to move Jordan Kyrou, they would maybe look for some change of scenery type deal where you do have a player coming back who could help you out. You know, I keep going back to the fact that Army says he wants to keep this thing competitive for the next couple of years. So I just don't see them in any of these trades that they make leaving a huge hole.
What are they going to need to be more competitive? More snipers, plumbers, or painters?
I think that's a good question. Yes. We should have the painters and the pipe fitters text in here. Who,
right.
It's like the Marines and Army. Who thinks they're better?
Something
do
like
we,
that.
That's yeah, a hot what take. Do we think, pipe fitters and painters out there?
Mm. Well, you need people to do everything. They do need goal scorers, don't they? They need increased offense for sure.
Yeah, they definitely do. But here's the thing: how competitive do you want to be? Do you want to contend for the Cup next year? Okay, then you're moving out three or four or five, six guys, and you're spending to the cap and. You know, you're making some trades and you're going into free agency. I just don't think they're doing that. The way that it appears that they're going is that they realize the retool is going to take 2, 3, 4 years, whatever, and they're going to try to stay somewhat competitive during this stretch. So that's why they brought in guys like Kapanen, Vrana, Hayes, and we saw what the results are. It's not to say that they can't be different next year, but it looks like, you know, they're going to be a team for the next couple of years unless there's major changes that's going to be right in that wild card conversation, or in this case, on the outside looking into the wild card.
Pivoting, you wrote today, I think it was on Zach Bolduc, a great article. What do you foresee in terms of, is he a top six, middle six? What's his ceiling if he keeps on progressing like he is?
So I know it's only 21 games, Mark, and it's a great question. I think that he's shown us that he has the skill level, and beyond the skill level, I talked to him about this yesterday, and I also talked to Drew Bannister about that. He is a very coachable player. When I talked to him last year, he played for the Quebec Ramparts, and their coach was Patrick Waugh, junior hockey. He said, I would a couple times a week sit down with Patrick in a back room, and we'd watch video of my defensive zone, and I want to get better at it. And he did the same thing in Springfield. And Drew Bannister said yesterday, every time you talk to this kid, you can see the engagement he wants to learn. A couple, probably, I don't know, a year ago, I had to write an article for The Athletic projecting, like, the 2026 Blues lineup. And at the time, Bolduc had been asking me, hey, I want to get a subscription to The Athletic. So I was trying to find him a code so that he could just pop right into The Athletic and read the story. So I did that. And one of the articles that he saw was that article with me projecting the 26 lineup, and I had him on the third line. And he said, third line? And I said, yeah. And I said, you know, there's a lot of good young players coming in, Snuggerud, Dvorsky, so on and so forth. And he said, hey, you got a job to do. You're doing what you're taught to do, so I'll see if I can change that. And, you know, here he is, 21 games, Mark, 3 goals. But I think we've seen some talent and some skill And yesterday, Drew Bannister said he does think that Zach Bolduc does have top six potential.
I thought I saw written on the bottom of his stick in a little Sharpie, it read, "I'll show Rutherford."
Oh, my.
Oh, maybe you got him fired up.
Yeah, we'll have to zoom in on that. Yeah, speaking of that stick, the white stick, I guess the older I get, I pay less attention to that type of stuff, but I did not know he was using that all-white stick, so I mentioned that in the article today, too, and he said he's going to switch to the all-black. So people are already bringing up the David Perron white skates things at Bolduc with the white stick.
Why would he use a white stick?
He said that when he is in Quebec, the CCM rep came to him and said, "Hey, look what I got," and he loves graphics, he loves, you know, that type of thing, and he said, "Give me that white stick." So he's used it for the past couple of years. Kind of surprised that he didn't catch a little more grief in that locker room, but Matt Kessel yesterday said, hard to see a shot, you know, coming off that white stick.
I want to make sure we tend to two pieces of business that I think are certainly noteworthy here before we let you go, JR. Drew Bannister's tenure could be coming to an end. There are only a handful of games left. I mean, again, theoretically, as Doug noted, they're not mathematically eliminated. They could be 3 points back of a playoff spot tonight with a win over the Blackhawks and the right things happening with Vegas. But we don't know what's going to happen with the head coaching situation. And Joel Quenneville is out there. And we have a texter making the observation that he thinks he's on the apology tour. Is there anything to that?
So here's the way I look at the Quenneville situation. I would not rule it out. And, you know, I don't want to be strong in my words saying that Joel Quenneville is going to be the next coach of the St. Louis Blues, but I would not rule it out. I know in the past, I know this with certainty, that the Blues have had some interest in Joel Quenneville. And I know in talking to people around Joel that he definitely wants to get back into the league. And he believes, or people around him believe, that St. Louis could be a soft landing spot, quote unquote, after what transpired in Chicago, that he could come back to a place where he's coached before, probably where he still has a lot of people behind him and some support, and he could come back in and try to, bring back the good name that he had prior to whatever happened in Chicago. Now, is that possible? Are there people around the league that are going to give Joel Quenneville the benefit of the doubt after everything that transpired in Chicago? Maybe there's not, but I think with Doug Armstrong, he's shown in the past him that he's willing to give people second and third chances. Yeah. You look at Jim Montgomery and others. Yeah. So I do think that there's an opportunity for Joel Quenneville to be the coach.
I've already forgotten much of what happened in Chicago. That was a sexual harassment thing in the locker room. Is that what that was all about?
Yeah, and the biggest thing with Quenneville was this, as it pertains to Quenneville, is you had Kyle Beach, and he was involved in a sexual encounter with the video coach, and Chicago made it into a hush-hush situation. They were in a playoff series, and I think that it was brought up behind closed doors with the executives and with Joel Quenneville. He was told to move on from it. They would take care of it. They did not take care of it. Mm-hmm. And Joel Quenneville, according to the general public, guilty of not making a bigger stir of things because of he knew some of the things behind the scenes. So, yes, as Tim alluded to a second ago, I think Joel Quenneville was on the Cam and Strick podcast and brought up some of these things and basically came out and said that he just didn't know a lot about that situation.
So, and what this texture is reading between the lines on, we talked a little bit about Mark McGwire, I think, in the last hour, Doug. Mark McGwire did not just pop up after his exile of his own choosing, really, to become the Cardinal hitting coach, if you recall. And I think that was about 14 years ago. He then did an apology tour. He had former White House press communications, had Ari Fleischer orchestrate that, and did a number of interviews. And then, after doing those interviews, he was welcomed back. Mm-hmm. In other words, Quenneville just can't pop up to be a head coach somewhere without doing the quote-unquote apology tour. And so, you know, I don't know. I know Cam Jansen and Andy Strickland certainly have a successful podcast, but I don't know if Quenneville's been on a bunch of other hockey podcasts or he just did it with those guys because he has a relationship with those guys. So is he on some kind of quote-unquote McGwire-esque apology tour, JR?
Yeah, it does seem so, Tim. He did one other interview, but it wasn't about the Chicago stuff. It was just coaching, you know, type questions in general. But this was the first time that he addressed the Chicago thing. You know, I can see that side, definitely, and it does kind of relate to what you're talking about with McGuire trying to get back in the game. You know, I got to say this, though. Quinville, I think, has wanted to get back in the game for a couple years. I think with the league, he needs to be reinstated. So I'm sure there's been some behind the scenes, you know, hey, keep quiet, and I think he has, and now I think it's getting to the point for where he's looking for that reinstatement, and they're going to have to go through the motions. You know, I hate to use it, you know, that that type of language, but go through the motions in terms of, you know, him coming out and talking, and obviously whatever team, whether it's the Blues or somebody else,
right,
who hires him, I mean, it's going to be days and weeks of these types of conversations for him to come back and get behind a bench.
An intriguing situation to follow, and a good observation by Doug. That was Harrison's brother, Master, who I think has won worst texter of the year, but he's having a really big
he's on his own
out.
Apology tour.
Yeah, it's intriguing to see the two correlate. And then finally, I know it happened about a week ago, but it's our first time, I think, talking to you, unless the boys were all, I was out, you know where I'm going. Snipes.
Yeah.
Jimmy Snipes. Yeah. I was texting with the Nonling, former producer here on TMA. We text quite a bit, and I read, you know, what you wrote. You had the exclusive. I read it, and I took it as sincere. Nonling is skeptical and a little concerned. I think it's sincere. I know it's strange, I think, on the surface, for a guy to elect to go back and play in college when he has an opportunity, when it clearly sounded like the Blues wanted him here. He would have already played some NHL games had he elected to not go back to college and play at Minnesota for another year. But I got the sense that he wasn't happy with his own play, and he wants to get that right, and he wants to give it a run at winning a championship, maybe building a quote-unquote super team in college at Minnesota. And so maybe I'm naive, but I think his intent is still to play with the Blues, and I took that at face value. What is your interpretation?
So to jump in, you're saying that the idea is he might not want to come to St. Louis.
That's what
go back
that's what
the draft.
Kevin Lorenz,
oh,
former producer. That's his own personal thing.
And I
haven't, and
I
haven't talked with JR about it. I haven't texted JR about it. And I was out on Monday when he's on 101. So it's the first time you and I have talked about it, JR. And I know you had that article on The Athletic. And you've talked with everybody. So what is your feel? I'm sure some Blues fans are a little concerned. They know the situation in Philadelphia that then led to the torts and Kevin Hayes situation with that podcast of a player just not wanting to go to an organization. Do you think that that's what's going on in any capacity? Or do you think that this is a genuine, surprising, but yet genuine gesture on the part of Jimmy Snipes?
I think it's surprising, but genuine. And I talked to him immediately after that tweet went out from the University of Minnesota saying that he was coming back. I texted him. He said, call me. I called him. And we talked for 15 minutes. And I'll tell you what, it sounded as sincere as you could get. And I know Kevin has a real good feel for that kind of stuff. But a lot of people are saying that because Minnesota was the next pick after the Blues took Snuggerud, that's a place that he'd want to go. His friend Brock Faber plays there now with the Wild. His dad, Snuggerud's dad, is friends with Billy Guerin, that he's going to try to work his way to Minnesota. And I just don't know that that's the case. And it certainly wasn't the case based on my conversation with him. Like, people need to know that Jimmy Snuggerud's grandpa went to Minnesota. His dad went to Minnesota. His dad lost in overtime in the national championship. Jimmy lost in overtime in the national championship. He brought it up, I want to win a national championship at Minnesota. And he also brought up, and Tim, he went on for 5 minutes, I need to be better. I did not play well this year.
Right.
I think I can have a longer NHL career if I go back to Minnesota and play hard. And I'll leave you with one last thing here. At the very end, I said, hey, listen, there's some Blues fans that think you might be steering this thing, and maybe you want to get to UFA and not come to St. Louis. And he said, not true, and the only way I can say this is I plan to be at Minnesota in one more year, and then I'll see you then in St. Louis.
How about that? Yeah, I hope, it is correct. I read that and I'm just like, I didn't hear it. You know, I'm reading your piece on The Athletic, so I don't have the context, the tone, the pitch, and all that stuff. But I'm like, I think that this is sincere, and I do think that the nucleus, what you just brought up, is the biggest thing, JR, and that is, he just didn't think he was playing really good. And so he wants to improve before he gets up here and plays with the NHL players. I get that. And if anything, I respect it. I got the sense, I think you think this, I certainly get the sense that Chris Kerber and Joey Vitale think this, that they've got something special, not necessarily with the play so much as, don't get me wrong, the play is good too, but what they're really impressed with Jake Nabors is the way he goes about it, like a kind of guy who eventually could have a C on his sweater. I think part of being a leader is that kind of self-awareness and selflessness, especially in hockey. And for Snuggerud to have this presence of mind, I mean, how many young people would have that and the balls to do it, honestly? I think that really speaks well to him, even though in the short term it kind of sucks for Blues fans.
Yeah, kind of surprising. Like, you could have plugged him in here. He could have been in that game in Nashville. Not that the rest of this year would have mattered, but put himself in a position to start out with the team next year. And one of those, talking about being a leader, one of those conversations he had with the University of Minnesota before he decided to go back was wearing the letter. And I think it's the C, and I think we're going to see the captain on Jim Snuggerud next year.
Good stuff. You can read more in The Athletic. Mark cited an article that's up this morning. And who knows, Doug, maybe they can get hot and then win a baby.
If we can just get hot, we can win
That's what
baby.
It is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what
you
they
don't
want
to win the A baby.
Yeah, most people at this,
this
point.
Baby.
That should go on a shirt. That's not a bad idea.
Sold out. That? That I think they all sold out.
You know, it popped up on my Facebook memories 5 years ago yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was the debut of the We Can Just Get Hot, We Can Win This Baby
thing.
How about that? And it was before the Jets series even started.
Did something happen 5 years?
What happened? I think the Plowhawk was furloughed six times in 2019.
Oh,
I think
right.
That's what it was.
A good firing run there.
JR, always appreciate it. Thank you so much, fine sir.
All right, Benjamin, keep reading those financial books, buddy.
There he is. That's J.R. discouraging Benjamin from getting into broadcasting, while Doug and I passionately plea for him to make the right choice, which is to go into broadcasting. And Henschen said the money and the stability is really in print. He texted that. And so
it's either broadcasting or blacksmithing. It seems to be where the future's headed.
I agree with you on both. Mark, Benjamin, thank you for coming in, as always. And Doug and I will privately confer with you about getting into broadcasting, because it sounds like your father's trying to steer you the wrong way.
I don't know what's
wrong.
We'll
go around his back.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. That's the right thing to do. There he is, Mark Hanna.
Thanks,
Benjamin.
Guys.
Thank you. There it is.
Thank you, guys.
In studio. How about the Quenneville thing? That was a good read by Harrison's brother Master, the apology tour thing.
Yeah. He must still have the passion. He's 65 years old. He's won.
Successful coaching.
Three Stanley Cups.
Okay, I got different data.
I'm sure he's made millions. I'm sure he probably feels frustrated by what happened in Chicago, that it wasn't his fault. It'd be easy for him to say, the hell with it. I'm going to go live in Palm Beach the rest of my life. But he wants back in. So I'm sure he would bring a passion. If he came to St. Louis, people immediately they'd be thrilled.
Could not agree with you more. The one thing I would say about it, and something JR has talked a little bit about it, is if the Blues really are in this kind of whatever they want to call it, retool, rebuild, even though they call it retool and are conscious not to call it rebuild, then I think the U.S. has a thing with age that I think is so overrated, and I also think it's bad for business. I know this is a totally separate conversation, but there's 65 where you're firing on all cylinders, and there's 65 where maybe you just don't have the desire anymore. But 65 in 2024. I mean, I know I'm sitting here, but you know, it depends. And if Joel Quenneville's hungry and he had a situation, when you and I were talking the other night, last night, as a matter of fact, I don't think I'm saying anything that's out of school here. The guy you're now caddying for has a young family.
Yes.
Well, that's a different situation than if his kids were in his 20s.
Totally.
You know, I mean, I've got a 2-year-old. My situation is going to be different than some of my peers whose kids are in high school or even getting ready for college. It's just a different situation. So you're motivated. Quenneville isn't necessarily motivated because he's got financial obligations, unless he's really managing his money poorly. But he got I don't know how much he was responsible for, because just like you, I don't know that many details about the Kyle Beach situation outside of what people have read. But he was exiled from the game, and he was on a trajectory to be considered one of the all-time greats, and now he's got to go do an apology tour. That's his motivation. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing is, here in St. Louis, this is not a cup-ready team. Now, it might be in a couple of years, but it'd be a little weird for a guy, 65 or not, but a guy at Quenneville's level to take on a retool when the team likely isn't close, unless this signals that the Blues are going to do some things aggressively this offseason. I just don't know how much they can really do to get themselves at the level of Dallas, Colorado, Vancouver, and then whoever in the Eastern Conference you would cite as the cup-ready teams.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think age could be a factor because this is not a sitting behind the desk job at 65. This is a skating on the ice with the team four or five times a week. Not hard, but skating. This is traveling half the year. It's a grind. It's a grind for anybody. And I have friends at 65 who are done physically,
right,
mentally, and I have others that are in great shape, and
right,
it's not a big deal.
That's what I'm saying. It's a case-by-case basis. And I just where I was going is I think sometimes people hit whatever, I guess, 60 or 65 and go, well, they're done. And I'm just like, I mean, maybe some are. And it might be a choice, or it might be they're just not right for whatever reason, physically or mentally.
If you've made it to 65 without a major health issue, then you're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
Is he the kind of guy that wants the project? Is he the kind of guy that wants to be the architect or part of the architecture team that puts this organization back together? I don't know.
I think, you know, I could be off on this, but I think he had at least two teams in St. Louis, maybe three, that he felt like could have won a Stanley Cup, and all of them came up short. The closest they got was the Western Conference Final in 2001 against the eventual Cup-winning Avalanche. And so from that standpoint, maybe it's like, okay, this is the way to finish things off. And again, also that he was exiled from the game. For the record, on Andy Strickland and Cam Jansen's podcast, the Cam and Strick podcast, if you'd like to listen to it, he said, I'm not blaming anybody. I blame myself for some things I could have and should have done differently. I didn't put it all together, that it resembled sexual abuse or sexual assault by not asking more questions. And I take ownership on that. I think that had I known more, I think I could have, I would have handled it completely differently. That's what Joel Quenneville had to say. He said, what I learned was that Brad, the video coach, was hanging around the AHL players, socializing with them, sending inappropriate texts, going to bars, and basically the guys were being bothered with it. Quenneville said he doesn't think sexual assault was mentioned as part of that conversation and that nothing was resolved in that meeting. He had that he was under the impression the organization's management group would handle the rest of the situation after that meeting. He said he didn't learn any more details about Aldrich's involvement with Beach until he read the independent report. I'm not blaming anybody, but the upper management, I had a name for them. I called them the firm, not in a derogatory way at all, but just the way that they did business. It was a matter of fact, you know, legal, business like law firm. And that's basically what it was. You knew your job and job description. You knew your role. You knew to stay in your lane, and you knew who the boss or bosses were. That's Joel Quenneville to Cam Jansen and Andy Strickland on their podcast. And you can listen to that or watch it on YouTube.
Well, so basically, he didn't handle a human resources issue as well as he should have. Isn't that kind of what it gets down to?
Maybe, but is he supposed to? Like, is he supposed to be responsible for that?
We have a text here that says, this apology is really gross and irresponsible. That's from the 636.
Well, I don't know.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I don't know.
The story isn't great, but it's hard to place blame on a coach. And, you know, these situations, there's a lot of people to blame. And what percentage of blame does it go to?
Mm-hmm.
Now the listeners are not happy with us.
Well, they never are,
what's new,
really.
I love when the door slams during a heartfelt, important quote. It's a first-class operation, as always. That's from the 314.
Iggy slammed the door on his way back in.
Yeah, that really ruined it.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joel.
I was getting into it until that slam.
Yeah.
Does anybody really come out when it comes to this topic? Do they really come out and just accept the blame totally when they're the ones being blamed? I'm watching the I just finished watching the I think it's called Catch and Kill with Ronan Farrow when they basically exposed what's his name?
Woody Allen.
Hollywood guy.
Woody Allen.
Harvey Weinstein. Oh.
And, nobody came out and said, I'm responsible. Yeah, everybody just passed the blame on to everybody else, and we didn't know. We didn't know any of this was going on, except for the girls. But somebody blamed Matt Damon And Ben Affleck, one of the girls, said, well, they knew when I said he just tried this. Oh, we told him to stop that. But they both said, oh, well, we really didn't know. So nobody's really accepting blame when these things come out.
I agree. I think they have great PR teams, too, that try to eliminate keywords like my fault or...
Well, it is possible that some of the stuff goes on and not everyone around knows what's going on.
That's right. That was
we
my
don't
point,
know everything
though,
going
right.
on in this station.
I couldn't agree more. And what winds up happening is then it becomes results-oriented and, oh, this person. And so you got to have somebody to blame. And then you take the highest-profile guy. How many people know who's – I don't know who the hell the GM of the Blackhawks was, the president of the Blackhawks, or even the name of the owner. I know he's passed away. Relative was a Rocky Wirtz. Passed
Scotty
away.
Scotty Bowman's son was up there.
Relatively recently. But who's the highest profile? Quenneville. And then and it's just, we got to go get him. And it's, I don't know. And again, with that said, maybe he was guilty as all get out. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. I have no idea. That's the other part of it. And then it can't be that way. And it just, these things irritate the hell out of me. And as always, I have a biased position that may be a mistake that I just default click to go against the angry mob, even though sometimes the angry mob may be right.
But that aside, let's say he comes to the Blues, right? Mm-hmm. That makes me think of the Bill Parcells quote. If you're going to let me do the shopping, let me at least
If I'm going to cook the meal, let me pick out the ingredients.
Groceries or something like that. Right. Like, so if he's going to take that job, is he going to be allowed to have some input on what kind of players he gets? And if he doesn't have that input, like, why would you do it?
Right.
I'm sure he would with the juice that he would have.
I would agree with that.
Sure. I would hope so.
And I also think if you're a Blues fan and you want to see him accelerate the process, that Quenneville coming back would signal that. At the same time, when the Cubs hired counsel away from the Brewers, I'm like, ooh, that means the Cubs are going to be super active this offseason. And when I was all said and done, they weren't all that active. I mean, Bellinger came back, but it wasn't like a super, super active offseason for the Cubs that I thought they were going to be involved in once they brought counsel in. So maybe that's just a long play.
We're far from a coach away. I'd probably keep Bannister, honestly. He hasn't totally sunk this ship. I think he's done enough to earn the job, and you have a roster that is,
I will tell you this, I don't think hockey people with the Blues feel that way. Just for the record, that doesn't mean that it is not that way, and it doesn't mean he won't get the job either. Because if they are in a retool, then who makes more sense than a guy who's kind of at this point in his career versus a Quenneville, in which the organization will catch hell if they do hire him. You know, so from some, not necessarily locally as much as it is around North America.
Kyrou going to have to sign off on this new coach?
I think the Kyrou thing is probably JR has said, I'm not necessarily expecting him to be on the roster when they open up the season in 2025. He might be here in 2024, 2025, but not October 2025. If I had to bet, if I'm betting, that's where my money is on Kyrou. So I think that they will move on unless something significant changes there.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Now, hold on a second. What did you just say?
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
We might use a promo there.
Yeah.
That went good.
All right.
Doug, we have a number of 15 handicaps in the Jay Randolph Jr. Fan Page Club Championship.
Me.
And that's the handicap you get if you don't have a handicap.
That's correct.
Okay.
Do you feel like that's a good default handicap for the players, Michael?
Just 15? That's just the number you're going to hand out?
Well, then that way you're not like giving guys like, oh, yeah, I don't have a handicap. Give me a 30.
I'm a 27. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I have a question about this event, this Shishawali event, as Doug would say.
It is a Shishawali tournament.
So is it 64 people? Is it match play?
64 great players.
How do you decide, you know, who goes against who? Is it a blind draw?
For the most part, it's a blind draw. For the members of the show, they're essentially grudge matches. Plowboy's going up against a gentleman named Todd Reising, who goes after the Plowboy in the text inbox quite a bit.
Iggy's quarterback of Kansas.
That's correct. This guy texts in is Todd Reising. It's nice. Iggy's going up against Mr. Licks. That's
Yes.
Jackson's going up against Mr. Siders, who's very critical of Jackson's ability to hit a 7-iron more than 140 years.
I'm not familiar with Siders' work.
He's been active throughout the day today.
Okay.
I'm going against the Pope. The Pope's a great guy, actually, and he beat me last year. I was stunned too, Michael. This guy could roll the rock.
You can get him back, though.
I know. That's what the grudge, man. We're about both the same indexes. And, Doug, has your opponent been?
I don't know. I haven't heard if it has.
KG at O-Town is doing a very special broadcast, I guess, to announce the pairings. Oh, I think, I was gone for four shows, so maybe I missed it. I don't know. The pairings
are. The board's still here.
What's that?
Still unwrapped. The bracket's still here. So
is it like March Madness?
It is. Yeah, you're going to do an office pool on the champions?
I probably should.
We figured 15 was a good handicap. If you're a player like me, you're going to usually shoot mid-90s or so. You can't be winning a tournament if you're that kind of player. So you can't be given
you can win this tournament.
You can't be given a 20 or 25 handicap and then walk away beating your chest that you won a golf tournament. So I figure 15, if you're a lousy player and you play to a 15 handicap and you play well, Maybe that's a little bit better.
Did you have this meeting with the committee to come up with this 15 number?
No, we just talked about it right here.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of how it's
done. Didn't know where it came from.
It's the same thing with Monahan and Yasser.
It's too low. It's too low a handicap. But again, if you're any worse player than that, you have no business winning even a Shishawali event.
But in the semifinals, Iggy caddied for a 30 who was playing against a 35.
Well, here's an idea.
They were putting for 8, and I think the person who got the 9 won the hole.
I was in the semis 1 year, and I'd been in the finals if I didn't miss an 8-foot putt, and I was playing to like a 19 then.
The look on
but Wellington's everybody would have won if they hadn't missed a putt.
What about if everyone just had a legitimate handicap, whether it's the
we don't play
the
enough.
Gin or the there's
do,
another
do guys
app.
Out on the PGA Tour have grints?
What's that?
There. I guess there's a portion of our audience who plays golf, but they don't want to pay the $30 for a handicap each year.
I've heard of this. Is that what it's called?
The grit.
If you don't have a USGA GIN number, you have a. There's another organization
it's
that
called
keeps
the
handicap. Okay.
The grit.
And do you feel as if it's accurate?
I don't really get enough involvement.
I feel like you have to have a definitive number. I mean, as nice as giving out 15 is,
yeah.
I feel like
we don't play enough to have a handicap.
Well, I mean, I'm just sitting out from afar.
All right. Well, what number would you assign to people that don't have a handicap?
I would make everyone have either a Grint handicap
or
a USGA Gin handicap. Well, yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's unfair if nobody has a handicap. What if a person is a 15, but they're really an 8?
I don't think we're going to have any of those.
Oh, really? In this event?
I have to say respectfully on that.
Who would cheat in golf?
good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's pull up our 2018 Masters. All right, the reason why I bring up 15 handicap, or was it 2019 that P. Reed got it? Which one year? Doug, was it 2018?
I don't know
that
the
he won the Masters?
2018?
I think it was 18.
18.
He was playing to a 12 that year.
And that's correct. Larry Mize, Mark O'Meara, and Jose Maria Olazabal were answering questions yesterday, and they were asked what a 15 handicap would shoot at Augusta in Masters conditions, not just like in a casual. Let's see what do you think the number is, by the way?
A 15 handicap at Augusta under tournament conditions, 110.
I was going to say 120. 100, okay. 100,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I also think some 15s don't know necessarily the rules, and I'm not saying they're cheating, but like even simple things as white stakes and
assuming that the rules were followed correctly.
Right.
I mean, the green speeds and the shots around the green would be so difficult for a person with that kind of handicap. They'd be if they got in trouble, which is very likely, on every green, it's going to be a circus.
All right. I mean, you're talking about close to 50 putts?
Yeah, you're talking about green speeds that are
over
like 12
holes.
Or 13 on the stimp meter. So you could have
and then you're putting things out. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you got to finish it out. You could putt it off the green a number of times. You could keep putting it in the water on certain holes. I mean, it'd be a disaster.
Here is what they had to say, Doug. Take a listen.
All right, hit the lever, Plowsy.
What would a 15 handicap shoot in Masters conditions at Augusta National?
Not that
a
funny.
A 15 handicap at Augusta National, playing from where these kids play today, for sure would not even have a chance of breaking 100. That's how difficult the course is. That's how much slope there is and speed in the greens. An average player would have a very difficult time getting around Augusta National in less than 100.
They'd have a hard time breaking 100.
Yeah.
They really would. Playing there for the first time, you're just going to be so excited, it's going to be hard to focus in on your game. It's just the nerves of playing there for the first time and then maneuvering those greens. I mean, the average amateur does not play greens like that. They may get some contours similar to that, but the speed is, you know, pretty unusual. They're pretty quick, and the contours, too. I think a 15 handicap, because, you know, they're normally shooting, what, mid-80s, something like that? They would have to play really, really, really good to break 100.
In Masters conditions, well, I think they would have a hard time breaking 100.
That's what we've gotten, that answer every time, so I think that's got to be what it is.
That goes without saying. That to me is obvious.
I don't know. Yeah. It's like 125 or 130, right?
We have a hard time breaking 100 at Forest Park.
I think I'm potentially in the 120 range, man. Yeah. OBs and four putts are easy on those greens.
Oh, I think you'd see 5 and 6 putts because these things, you might as well be putting on the moon.
The man who won last year four putted on his first hole of the tournament. Rahm four putted for a double bogey.
Didn't Scotty Scheffler four putt on the final green when he won?
He did. That is correct in 2022.
Yeah. I don't like that in golf. I don't like a circus atmosphere on the greens. Golf is hard enough. You don't need to be playing miniature golf on the greens where the putt ball rolls back down the hill or rolls in the water. To me, that's just stupid.
I think you could hit like 125 or 120 if you're thinking that you just have to hit it under 130. So you're going to play it super safe. But I think if you go out there trying to be aggressive and play like a normal round of golf, you're going to be hitting them a lot of OB and a lot of in the water. But if you're self-consciously just trying to get sevens on every hole, then I find that to be maybe a little more manageable to get.
Yeah, could be.
120, there's no way under 120 to me.
I would agree with you.
I think the putts are killer, man. I think the putts, you had 4 or 5 up on
you're gonna have
9 holes. There's 50 right there.
You're going to have at least 3 or 4 greens where you're going to have just a disaster happen because you can't stop the ball. You put it off the green. You put it into the water. It's just that there's nothing like that place.
Don't forget a rough situation or getting a bunker.
Yeah, it's just for a 15 to 20 handicap, you got no shot.
Watch out, Welly. You're speaking reason to these fats. They'll be busting out the pitchforks soon on the handicap conversation. That's from the 314.
Well, yeah.
Speaking Pearls reason to these fats.
I'm sure I'm not a 15. I'm more like a 20.
That's where I am.
But
you'll take the 15?
Because
you want to have honor for the event?
I have no business winning any tournament, even one that's Shishawali in nature.
This is one you could win.
It is not one I should win.
Maybe it's not one you want to win.
I don't know. That could be. I don't know how you peacock off saying, I just won, when you shot a 98 and the other guy shot an 82. I don't know how you could possibly
do that. Hey, whoever wins this tournament is going to take that trophy over to Sauget and enjoy themselves that day.
That's exactly right. Have a little fun, Doug. If you hit your 7-iron 140 yards, you would definitely shoot a 150, and that's from Jackson's first-round opponent, Mr. Siders. There he is.
Mm. What's this Siders all about? I'm not familiar with his
I'll tell
work.
You what he's about. He's probably one of the worst human beings we have.
Okay.
Maybe we need to have Jackson play Todd Reising and you play Mr. Siders.
Set up. I don't mind Todd, and Todd seems to be a little bit more normal of a human. I think Siders, I would have to bring my shiv and always have my back. I'd be ready. Yeah. Let Jackson take him.
God almighty.
I ain't worried.
My sources are telling me that the Quiznos off of Tesson Ferry is subsidizing the gin for most of the players in this year's Page Glove Championship. That's some glove blogger Tom Traven. I didn't know that Quiznos was still around, much less subsidizing.
I'll give a take. Blimpies is about 3 times as good as Quiznos. I have no idea how they survived and not Blimpies.
I thought they're out of business.
They are. That's what I'm saying. It's shocking that Quiznos still is able to slang sandwiches and Blimpies isn't.
Did you have to turn any players away?
Oh, yeah, there's an alternate list that's deep.
14 deep on the alternate list?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's your handicap right now, Willie?
I'm going to guess plus 1.2.
I haven't checked in a while. It's probably around 0, I would think.
I think it's a plus.
Hmm. And who's the best player you ever played against?
Ooh, good question.
Probably Bubba Watson.
You played head-to-head against him?
In college a couple times.
Is he the one who said, I can't believe you beat me?
No, he said that to my teammate who beat him.
Shook his hand.
Wouldn't shake his hand.
Oh, nice.
Wouldn't there's one of the answers to your questions, Doug.
Yeah, it just stumbled on it, didn't it?
I think it's tied between old Bubba and Stephen Ames would be my two favorites.
Oh, Stephen Ames? Really?
Oh, atrocious.
He of 9-8 fame?
Exactly.
Very gracious to Tiger.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's why he talked crap before the Tiger match.
Really
Tiger,
foolish.
And then Tiger beat him 9-8.
Poked the Tiger.
Which literally meant, he won on the 10th green in a match, which is almost mathematically impossible.
Skunked him. He skunked him.
Skunked him.
Yeah, now Bubba, played with Bubba in college. Actually played with Bubba one time in the snow in Rome, Georgia. And then my teammate beat him in our tournament. And at the end of the round, my teammate, who's a hell of a player, Bubba would not shake his hand. And he looked at him and he said, I can't believe you beat me.
Yep.
Nice.
So Wellington told that story one time when we were playing with Skip Berkmeyer, who's what, like a plus two or three and has won a million amateurs around
here. He's probably plus four.
So then I shook Skip's hand and I said, I can't believe you beat me.
Yeah.
So I use that anytime I get a chance to do it. Tim is a low single digit player. Could you break 90 in Augusta as it's set up for the Masters? Michael, let's answer that question in unison. Absolutely not.
I would think not.
I mean,
First time looking at it.
I think I'd be lucky to break. I shot an 88 at Harbortown last week, and all due respect to Harbortown, it's not Augusta. Now the wind's up, and I played crappy, but either way, I'm not breaking 90 at Augusta. And I doubt I'm breaking 100, actually, at Augusta.
Feels like distance is such a big thing at Augusta. Like, if you're playing Masters condition tees all the way back, you're taking some big clubs on the par threes, trying to cover water. I don't know.
Yeah, and if you get it in Masters conditions, the greens are going to be so firm, it's going to be hard to stop the ball. And then once you get on the green, then all the fun starts.
Yeah,
so it's just
for real. I mean, yeah, how many greens regulation is a 15 getting on?
You'll probably notice that early in the tournament this week, the scores are always pretty low. The first round, the first day, they kind of soften it up a little bit, but then like. As the tournament goes on, they dry it out. They don't water. They use the sub-air system to make it firm. And then, you know, by Sunday, you know, Scottie Scheffler four putts the final green. John Rahm four putts the first green. I mean, these are the best players on the planet, and they can't even three putt. So, anybody who's just a regular old Joe is going to have a real problem out there.
Indeed, indeed. Doug, let's go to the Design Air Heating and Cooling email of the day. Ow! The toughest part of starting my emails with talking about how amazing Tim is the editing down how dazzling of a man he truly is. Today's email originally started out with 17 pages, but this email is about the first time I witnessed male-on-male felching.
Oh!
1997, me and my butchie had headed out to Fox Run in House Springs for the Dinah Shore. They used to play the Dinah
Shore.
They
did not.
They had a ladies' event there.
Not the Dinah Shore.
No, not the Dinah Shore.
They played the very final LPGA event here.
If he doesn't know, nobody knows.
3 hours in, and Butchie had got shot down by every brush-cutted female in the gallery.
Oh.
Nobody wanted what Butchie had to offer. Just when we thought no sex was to be found, here came groundskeeper Lars. Looking damn sexy with his Carl Spackler rubber boots. Hey, guys, either you're horny, Butchie was like, keep dreaming, shorty, you're not my type. Besides, with your body type, I bet you got a small one. Well, that did it. Carl yanked down Butchie's parachute pant and planted those boots firmly in the sand trap for leverage. Butchie's face upon entry was priceless because Butchie couldn't have been more wrong about this guy's donker size. Carl didn't go in very far, but he beat the holy heck out of the sides. When he finished, he called over his trainee, now clean up this mess. His flunky immediately siphoned up Carl's love he had left on Butchie's fundament.
Okay, that's enough. We don't use the word fundament.
Am I in the filtered file, Jackson, or am I in the wrong?
Come on, Jackson.
You're in the filtered file.
You allowed that?
I thought it had legs.
Who was it, Tim?
Drew, and then I guess maybe might be related to Dave. Peacock.
Drew Peacock has been suspended. He's been suspended a period of 2 days' time. His name, as we speak, is going into the Illinois Recovery Center suspension logule because he needs help. And he can get it at the Illinois Recovery Center, their website, IllinoisRecoveryCenter.com.
Jackson, is the filtered file fully updated?
It is, yes.
Okay, all right. I didn't want to just go through and then Doug read something that Brian Hoffman would read.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Ann Young, I'm writing this email at 8:23 Eastern, so it's going to be a busy day for the TMA beat writer. Sup, Welly? You fine? Thanks. That's from number one Asian intern Brian Henshin. Oh. I'll be hosting a, quote, non-sports people, unquote, luncheon. Now, you can work in sports, but this is meant for people who don't follow the baseball. What's that? A bunch of sports talk radio people were there? Well, Lauren was there, so I got what I want.
Oh. Brian Henshin.
Yeah, you'd have fit right in yesterday.
Ah!
Would you consider yourself a non-baseball person?
No, I've been doing it way too long.
Oh, you're an expert, of course.
Tomorrow is the day we've all been waiting for. The most prestigious sporting event of the year begins on Thursday, but it's more than just a golf tournament. It's the pageantry. It's the green grass, and most importantly, it's the unveiling of the new members-only diaper-changing table that was recently installed on the Sarazen Bridge. They installed a diaper-changing station on the Sarazen Bridge?
Right underneath it. You can't.
Is that right? I can picture it now. Sunday afternoon, the crowd roars as Tiger stops for a photo on the famous 15th hole. He seductively places his palms on the changing station as he looks over his shoulder like a Playboy centerfold, slightly arching his back. He silently mouths the words, "Oh, Bill," as he pretends to insert an imaginary sibian into his rear cavity.
No.
The patrons cheer again as he puts his three-wood between his legs, pretending like it's a giant dong as he air humps the edge of the changing table like a naughty mime.
That's enough.
Here come Ernie Els and Retief Goosen. Goosen's in the field?
Don't know.
I don't know.
To join in the fun. Now they're all grinding on each other like Brian Kelly rubbing on a recruit. Augusta, your dogwoods and pines, they play on my mind like a song. And you know what that song sounds like? It sounds like three dudes beating cheeks on a brand new diaper changing station. Fun fact, the Sarazen Bridge was originally dedicated to celebrate a double eagle, but now it's about to experience double anal as pro golfers take turns mounting.
No.
Four, please. JV golf coach now gaping.
JV golf coach now gaping.
And finally, of course, the Cardinals are an inept organization run by a dysfunctional hierarchy of insecure yes men who consistently insult the intelligence of their fans. Of course, but maybe the people in charge actually know what they're doing, and the angry mob of mouth breathers needs to shut the F up. Of course, the Cardinals have consistently run off outfielders who used to be prospects for virtually zero return, only for them to immediately prosper into all-stars elsewhere. Of course, but maybe. Maybe it's just too small of a sample size, and before long, things will regress to the mean as Tyler O'Neill will throw out his back, banging them two at a time, while Randy Arozarena will alienate his manager by sharing something inappropriate on Instagram. Of course, the Cardinals once again overestimated their pitching depth and will get diminishing returns from the olds in the rotation. Of course, but maybe. Maybe Sonny Gray is a legit ace, and they just need Michaelis, Mats, Lynn, and Gibson to stay healthy in 8 innings every 5 days, and if we can just get hot, we can win this baby.
Mm-hmm.
So what if it was the lowest-attended night game in the history of the stadium? They had a great turnout at the luncheon for the non-sports people. Well, I didn't go, but I saw that Lauren was there. I told her she's leaving money on the table by not charging for the foot pics she posts online. Why is that creepy?
Oh.
No, I wouldn't take a run at Lern if she got divorced. I've got my sights set on the former Hollywood madam turned bird sanctuary owner, Heidi Fleiss. Yeah, we've kept in touch since that time in 2013. I booked her when TMA was simulcast on the Artie Lang Show and 590 The Man. I also tried to book Jose Canseco, but things fell through when he asked, "What yo budget?" Still a great night. That's from Buck Swope. And that's what we have for the Design Air Heating and Cooling. Email the day. Okay. What you got?
I like Buck Swope right there at the tail end. Thank you. Buck Swope right there at the tail end.
I finally got the name. I had to put it together. Drew Peacock. And I laughed at that. I'm gonna go with Kevin Miller.
I think Drew Peacock wins as well.
Dang, right,
congratulations to Drew Peacock. You have won.
He was the suspended.
Design Air Heating and Cooling email today. Oh, I didn't have that in my notes. Congratulations to Drew. Doug, safe travels out to SoCal.
Oh, well, thank you.
Jackson and I are going to go down the hallway. You will be back tomorrow, and we will watch the Dogwoods and Pines, although we might have a weather situation in Augusta tomorrow.
That's what I hear, but it'll be fun to watch it on the internet.
Yes,
and,
we will.
Doug, it was great to see you, and I'm so nice to see how well your hair is.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Good to see you.
Enjoy California.
Yeah.
Indeed. I haven't got to see your hair, but I assume it's doing well as well.
It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, you're doing just fine.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, if I have any trouble, I know where to go.
Yeah, I mean, now it's hair restoration.
Of course.
Sweet mother of mercy. Jackson and I are going to go down the hallway. We're going to get our asses ripped for an hour on 101 ESPN.
Yeah, how's that going over there?
Fun.
Yeah.
That didn't sound sincere.
That's coming up for the next hour on 101 ESPN. For the Plowhawk, for Kenneth Iggy Strode, for Jackson Burkett, for Michael Wellington, for my brother Kevin, for Douglas Elvin Vaughn. I'm Tim McKernan. This has been TMA, presented to you by Brown and Crouppen.